On this week's episode, there's a strange woman walking around Athens. There's a strange creature in the skies above Indiana. And there's a strange, strange house in Atlanta, Georgia. This week on Strange Pathways. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. I'm having a good week. I hope you're having a really good week too. The one thing that's keeping me down, hay fever. I'm recording this on the back end. Excuse me. I'm leaving that in. I'm recording this on the back end. I am having just a vicious time with hay fever this year. I do suffer from what some people term long COVID. I have shortness of breath. I have just achy muscles, what have you. A lot of stuff that I just did not have before I contracted COVID twice. But I've never had allergies in my life. Pre-2020. After 2020, allergies. So there is a lot of editing in the show. And I apologize for it. You're going to hear my voice kind of tighten up a little bit as I try to fight off coughs, a little bit of stumbling. Bear with me. The stories themselves, still absolutely amazing and incredible stories. Let's get on to the tales. Our first case is going to take us all the way back to April 21st, 1953, the Anno Iliopolis neighborhood in East Athens, Greece. It was nighttime whenever our witness, a woman named Vasiliki F., decided that she was going to take a walk. Now, Vasiliki, she was like a lot of us. There seemed to be those amongst us who never anything paranormal happens to. And then there are those, like Vasiliki, who are just like flypaper for this sort of phenomena. Be it a state of mind, perhaps something in the genetics, maybe something just in their perception of reality. Some people seem to have the paranormal's attention. Now, Vasiliki was out walking, and she notices this strange woman that she's never seen before in her neighborhood. As Vasiliki gets a bit closer, she sees that this woman's eyes are large and protruding. They're set above a high forehead. The woman's waist is incredibly thin. It's almost impossibly thin. The woman is wearing very, very old-fashioned gray clothes, a skirt and a jacket, and inside of this, the woman is wearing tight, transparent trousers. At first, Vasiliki believes that the woman is being followed by a very small dog, but once Vasiliki gets a bit closer, she finds this dog is actually a shadow, just a piece of shadow hovering slightly above the ground. This odd woman is holding the dog with a thick, transparent cord. Now remember, Vasiliki had experiences with the paranormal before. This may be high strangeness, but this is nothing that she hasn't really dealt with on maybe a lesser basis. Be it bravery or just maybe boredom with the unusual, the witness goes over to the woman and asks her Who are you? Where are you from? The woman just glares at her. Just a look of pure hate. And then walks away. She last sees the woman going to the St. George site of antiquities. Now the next day, there was news in the nearby fields of St. Nicholas, an aluminum hut descended from the clouds and landed. Please remember, this is 1951 in Greece. Perhaps the term UFO hadn't been wide use in Greece at this point. It certainly was in the United States. A shepherd witnessed this event, this aluminum hut. And through the windows that were set in the side of the aluminum hut, the shepherd saw what he called incredibly ugly dwarves. One of which had a very beast-like animal head. One must wonder what the shepherd would have thought. Is this a new type of craft? Am I seeing something paranormal? Am I seeing something of the other worlds, aliens, elves, parallel dimensions? Or maybe he was just stunned. A few minutes later, a door opens in the hut, and one of the dwarves come out. They're holding something like a golden plate in their hands. And then, the woman that Vasiliki had seen the previous day appeared. The dwarf bows to her, presents the plate, and this strange wasp-like woman. That's the image I get. High forehead, protruding eyes, an impossibly thin waist. It feels like the body of a wasp, something insect-like, impersonating a human. The dwarf bows to her, presents the plate, and she fills the plate with dirt. The dwarf and the strange woman go into the hut. It takes off and vanishes up in the sky with a bang. It wasn't the first time that Vasiliki had had a strange experience, and it wasn't the last. In 1970, she had a strange experience where she saw a UFO and a large black dog materialized inside of her house. So it wasn't the first time. It wouldn't be the last. What was this strange woman? What was the aluminum hut? Were these visitors from another world? Were they inhabitants of a parallel dimension? Or were they entities that live someplace with us, crypto-terrestrials? I don't think there's a goldfish alive that knows cows exist. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I know my cats don't know about amoebas. I know my dogs don't know about elephants. Could there be something on this planet, some sort of intelligent creature that we share the planet with, but we have no idea about because they're so far ahead of us? And the same that a goldfish living in a pond may glimpse a cow drinking from that pond. Perhaps Vasiliki and the Shepherd glimpsed some sort of civilization that we share this planet with, but are completely unaware of. Our next tale takes us back to Saturday, September 5th, 1891, 2 o'clock in the morning, Crawfordsville, Indiana. Marshall McIntyre and Bill Gray are ice delivery men. Now remember, this is 1891. Ice is very important. You don't have refrigerators per se. You have ice boxes. Big, ugly affairs to keep your food cool. And how this is done is a large block of ice is placed in there. It's essentially a very, very complicated cooler. Now, Marshall and Bill were prepping their wagon for their morning rounds. And they get that feeling. We talked about it last week with the 2-foot moth. We've talked about it before whenever people see Mothman. And Marshall and Bill are feeling it right now. Awe and dread. Now they look up and they see a horrible, horrible apparition. Their own words. It was about 18 feet long, 8 feet wide. And it's moving very quickly through the air. It's got several pairs of side fins. This creature is pure white. It's Lovecraftian in that it has no definite shape or form. It just looks like this white blanket fitted with fins. There's no tail. There's no head. But there is one giant flaming eye. And there's this weird sound. It's coming from a mouth that they can't really see. But there's this wheezing sound. This creature, it flapped like a flag in the wind. And it squirmed through the air and acted almost as if it was in agony. This entity floated in the air for about an hour. McIntyre and Gray thought that it was usually staying somewhere between the 300 and 400 foot range, but it stayed there for an hour. McIntyre and Gray ended up hiding in a barn. They harnessed their horses and they left. They absolutely left. But they weren't the only people to see it that night. A lot of people saw the Crawfordsville monster. One of the witnesses was a G.W. Switzer, who was the pastor of the First Methodist Church. Just after midnight, Reverend Switzer walked out of his door. He was getting some water from his well, and then he saw the creature. Switzer runs in, wakes his wife, and they look at this thing swarm through the air in this twisting, writhing fashion. Switzer thought it was very similar to the way serpents kind of move across the ground or through water. At one point, the Switzers thought that the Crawfordsville monster might land on the lawn of Lawn Place, which was the home of the then-deceased U.S. Senator Henry S. Lane's widow. But it didn't. It swooped down, lifted up back into the air, and continued its route around the city. Of course, even back in those days, you had your detractors. a Professor Burton of Keeley's Institute for Inebriates in Plainfield, Indiana. The professor wrote to Reverend Switzer and invited him to visit to seek a cure. But these reports, a lot of believers came forward as well. The Indianapolis Journal picked up the story. Newspaper as far as the Brooklyn Eagle picked up the story. Sightings upon sightings upon sightings came through to the Crawfordsville post office. Some people thought Judgment Day was near. Some people had thought they'd seen it in the daytime. They were wondering what color it was. They were wondering if other people had seen it in Ohio. Was this a UFO? Was it a ghost? Was it, and we've talked about this before, was it some sort of weird, vaporous, atmospheric beast? A John Hornbrick and Abe Henley followed this creature. And they thought that it was a flock of hundreds of killdeer. The bird's wings, the white underfeathers, the cries, they thought maybe low visibility, damp air. The newly installed electric lights in the town caused the birds to become disoriented. It doesn't... I've seen bird swarms. But that doesn't seem right to me. There was another explanation. There was one where it was like somebody thought it might have been a balloon parachute. That one doesn't fit either. I mean, if it was a flock of hundreds of killdeer, they wouldn't have seen it as one continuous creature. They would have seen it as specks. Killdeer, and I've seen killdeer before, killdeer do not fly that close to one another. A balloon or a parachute, it wouldn't have had the cries. It wouldn't have had the wails that this creature had. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe as a modern man, a man who is reading this 100 years plus after the fact, maybe there were more killdeer at the time. Maybe electric lights at the time confused killdeer that they don't get confused over anymore. But it really seems to me that this was something else. This was an oddity. This was one of those strange atmospheric beasts that we've talked about before. Some that can be photographed using infrared photography. We've even talked about a cloud that followed a man, morphed a pair of lips and spit on him. Once again, same as the other story. Perhaps we're sharing this planet with creatures that we really don't know about. Our last tale is going to take us back to the evening of September 8th, 1987, Atlanta, Georgia. For over 20 years, 1114 Fountain Drive has been owned by William and Minnie Clyde Winston. William is 79 years old. Minnie is 77. They have three children, all adults, at the time of this incident. Willie, as he's more commonly known, was not in good shape. His kidneys were failing. He underwent dialysis regularly. Minnie provided much of his caregiving. The house itself is small, cozy little affair. Three bedrooms made of brick. Six rooms total. What's going to happen to those six rooms just absolutely defies any logical explanation. Minnie's soaking in the tub. If you've ever cared for a sick relative, you know what an incredibly demanding life that can be. Minnie is soaking in the tub. It was absolutely a turmoil for life inside and outside. At the time, race riots were happening in Atlanta. The house is locked. The alarm activated for the night. Minnie decides that she's had enough time in the tub. She steps out and immediately steps into a red puddle. Now this puddle didn't seem to have any real source. It was coming up through the tile right at her feet. Minnie wasn't scared. She didn't know where it was coming from. But then she started to, because as she looked, what she thought was some sort of weird fluid, she realizes this looks and feels like blood. What if Willie hurt himself? Minnie runs out of the bathroom, screaming Willie's name. She gets into the hall. There's blood everywhere. It's along the baseboard. It's smeared across the walls. And there are droplets, huge droplets, droplets the size of coins, splattered everywhere. And then a fountain of blood shot through the wooden floor. It was like somebody turned on a garden hose attached to an artery. She runs into Willie's room, shakes him awake. She asks, please come out and look at this. And they go out there, and everything is covered in blood. Absolutely everything. Minnie ends up calling emergency services. They dispatch the police and EMTs to the house, but the EMTs get there. They can't find anything. They look at the Winstons. None of them are injured. And Willie's not bleeding. His wife's not bleeding. No one else is there. There was no clear source for this substance in the house. There's no explanation at all. The doors and the security alarm had been locked and set by 9:30 that night. And whenever it was set, the house was clean. The alarm had not been tripped. There was no forced entry into the household. The police take samples of this substance, and they send it off to the state crime lab. And the results come back. It's blood. It's human blood. The police start to think maybe Willie's dialysis equipment malfunctioned. So they take samples of Willie and Minnie's blood. Both of them are type A, but the blood found on the floors and the walls of 1114 Fountain Drive, it's type O. The police are stunned. Detective Steve Cartwright, an investigator on the case, said it's an extremely strange situation. I've been on the force 10 years. I've never seen anything like this. He's got a real problem because there's blood. There's a lot of human blood. But the police can't even figure out if there's a crime for them to be investigating at all. There's no body. This blood is coming from the house. And houses don't bleed. There are those that are thinking that this is a hoax. There was an anonymous police source that said some adults will act like children just to get attention. He was essentially saying that these two elderly people, the Winstons, they were the parents of three. They had spotless records. He's claiming that these two people in their 70s, one of which who is on dialysis, hoaxed this. And he said, well, he's on dialysis, so he has access to blood. How? I've known many people who have been on dialysis. People close to me. It doesn't give you access to blood. Now, one of the Winston's grown daughters, they worked at a hospital. And they said, well, she could have planted the blood. How? I've got a secret for you. Type O blood is like gold to hospitals. I could see if the blood, oh, well, we got this blood sample. It was type A. This one was AB. This one was O. I could see that. But all type O blood? No. No. Now, the house wasn't a high priority because of the race riots and the shooting. And the police couldn't even really pin down if a crime had happened there or not. So this kind of got put on the back burner. And unfortunately, what proceeded was an absolute travesty. The Winstons became the intense focus of the media. They would get constant phone calls. The phone rang all night and day. Remember, this is a couple in their 70s. He's sick. The Winstons would begin to shout from their home, there's no blood in this house. Now get away from here. I don't want anything more to do with it. Just leave us alone. And there was William George Raleigh Jr. He just went to this couple unannounced, reporter in tow. Now, Raleigh was turned away. Now, he said that he was going to keep asking permission over and over and over and over. What a dick. Excuse my language. What an absolute dick. To those out there that fancy themselves paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, what have you, don't act like this. You're not doing this community any favors. There was so much going on the Winstons just finally said, it was rust and mud. And then another time they said, it's red dye that leached out from the rug. Contaminated water from leaky pipes. Now, the test said conclusively it was real human blood. But can you blame this couple? Can you blame them at all? I talk about how we need to believe people on this podcast quite a bit. But we have to make sure that we don't overcorrect. There's believing people, there's investigating, and then there's swinging the other way and becoming a criminal pest about it. If people want to be left alone, we have to respect that as well. So of this, I beg you. Ask nicely once. Leave a card if you must. But don't, for the love of all that is holy, do not be a William George Raleigh Jr. Thank you for joining us once again here on Strange Pathways. Our Twitter, Pathways Strange, TikTok and Instagram, Strange Pathways Podcast. Join us over on Facebook. We're going to have a few photos up on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter dealing with the cases that we talked about here today. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so at strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Head over to YouTube. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe on that. That really does help us. And I'll tell you what, the long form stuff over on YouTube, it's becoming a dying art form. YouTube is just becoming a glorified Instagram. So if liking, commenting, subscribing, it does a lot to help us over there. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. I am fighting hay fever like you wouldn't believe. I have paused and edited out so many coughs, it's ridiculous. Thank you for bearing with me. I feel the need to cough again. Take care of yourselves and each other.